Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and certainly the, well, this hour, they're going to be your views as well, because this is Open Line Wednesday, and we'll invite your calls here. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we're going to be talking about Afghanistan and Iraq, but you don't have to talk about that. If you have a question, you have a comment, you want to talk about something else, that's be just fine. But right now, of course, I thought I'd share with you a very interesting interview I had the other morning with a lieutenant general. He was had been the assistant commander of the CENTCOM, which is the center in Tampa, Florida, where they directed the war in the Middle East. And of course, he was there before the 9/11 attack on the United States. So basically, the general, as we talked, and this is the second time I've had an opportunity to talk with him. He's a three-star Marine general. He's retired from the military now. And as you talk with people, you begin to know how they feel. I think he's a very patriotic, a very caring, a very a courageous gentleman. I have the greatest respect for him. But I asked him, certainly since he was the number two man in command at the time America went to war in Afghanistan, why the United States didn't capture Osama bin Laden, and pointed out that certainly the president had told us we were going to war with Afghanistan because Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda had actually directed the attack on the World Trade Center, and the president had promised he was going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. Do you remember that statement? We're going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. But then, of course, after Osama bin Laden was presumably trapped in the Tora Bora Mountains by December of the year 2001, why we didn't go after him. I mean, we bombed that area, but certainly we could have sent our men in there, but we didn't. And he was allowed, presumably, to escape into Pakistan. And it was very, very interesting what General Mike DeLong told me. He said, we didn't go into Afghanistan necessarily to get Osama bin Laden. We went in to change the regime in Afghanistan, and if we had gotten Osama bin Laden, it would have been nice, but we didn't fail to get him because that wasn't the primary reason we were there. Well, if that statement is so contrary to what most Americans believe, and yet I believe that he was being absolutely true. In fact, we have an article, and I'll be glad to send a copy of that article out of the Washington Times to any of you who would like to have it, see it. And it was, I believe, October 6th or October 7th, about the time our first troops arrived on the ground. And it was an interview with a high-ranking military official in Washington, D.C., who said, our primary job is not to get Osama bin Laden. Our policy is not Osama bin Laden first, but Osama bin Laden last, because if we were to capture or kill Osama bin Laden, how would we justify continuing the war? And you must understand that this is really what it was all about. It had nothing to do with Osama bin Laden, because after all, remember, 15 of the 19 hijackers had come from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia had financed the Taliban. Saudi Arabia had financed al-Qaeda. Saudi Arabia is financing Islamic terrorism throughout the world, and Osama bin Laden was a Saudi Arabian, and his family was one of the leading families in Saudi Arabia. In fact, they were here in the United States at the time of the 9/11 attack. And the question is, why didn't we go to war with Saudi Arabia? Why did we go to war with Afghanistan? And it was because we wanted to be able to put a pipeline across Afghanistan. That was one of the purposes. But even beyond that, I believe there was another, far more sinister agenda. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome your calls. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, let's go, of course, to Jeff, who's calling from Utah. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Oh, good. How are you?
Doing just fine.
I have one small comment and three questions I wanted to ask you.
All right, fine. To speak up, because are you on a cell phone?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
One comment is just for information, and I don't mean to cast aspersions or anything, but as far as Bill Clinton belonging to DeMolay, I'm sure he did, but DeMolay is really an ineffective organization. It's just a way to get kids used to the whole idea of the Robert's Rules of Order and caring about rituals.
I see. Are you a DeMolay?
Yes, I was.
All right, fine. Well, yeah, you know that, of course, that Bill Clinton was honored as sort of a high-ranking DeMolay, whatever that means. But go ahead. What's your point?
But anyway, so I just thought you might like to know that information. Anyway, but
isn't it sort of a lead-in into Masonry?
Yes, it's just to lead them into it. Sure. It's not really that they don't teach them anything or give them any secrets or anything.
All right.
Although they do lionize Jacques DeMolay and make him out to be this big hero.
You think he was a big hero?
Yeah.
You think he was a pretty good guy then, Jacques DeMolay?
Well, I don't necessarily.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
That's part of their ceremony, is to make him look like he's the greatest martyr that there ever was. Anyway.
Okay, fine. Do you have anything else to say?
Well, I got a couple, several questions. It looks to me like it's going to be Obama and Hillary, our next president. But it doesn't really go along with the whole idea of the white male Illuminati kind of idea, where the male phallus is the central driving force.
Well, I think we'll just have to wait and see, won't we, Jeff? I don't know who the next president is going to be, and we'll just have to wait. I think it's going to be very interesting.
Right.
Okay. Anything else you want to say?
Yeah. When they manage to collapse our economy completely, who's going to buy their stuff? That's what I want to know.
Well, they're more interested in control. Hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Jeff, who's calling on a cell phone from Utah. He asked, when they collapse our economy, who's going to buy their stuff? And Jeff, I think you have to understand that they're really not interested in stuff. They're interested in control, because, you see, they have a different worldview, and they put very little value on human life. And they'd far rather see the elimination of probably four-fifths of the world population than worry about who's going to buy their stuff. But thanks so much for calling.
Oh, one last question.
Right, uh-huh.
When they do collapse the economy, can they accelerate home loans without a reason?
No, they really can't. But the thing is that a lot of people will not have the income to be able to pay on their home loans, and so they will simply just confiscate their property. That's the thing that bothers me, is that many people are going to lose their jobs, and of course this whole system is going to come apart, and that's exactly what they want. But out of the chaos that they plan to create will come the new world order, the new world religion, and of course the new world leader. Thanks so much for calling, Jeff.
Thank you.
And let's go to Ray calling from Santa Cruz, and again our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and it's up to you. Have a question, a comment, well, I would be glad to try to answer it, but right now let's talk to Ray. Hi, Ray, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I wanted to make some comments about the coming presidential election, and this concerns actually the banking institutions. Apparently, Bear Stearns in New York and Manhattan, as they've been holding these closed-door primary in the confines of the bank. So what's happening is they summoned, Bear Stearns summoned the candidates Romney, Clinton, and Giuliani, and Obama and Thompson to the headquarters in Midtown Manhattan to have exclusive presentations and quality assurance sessions with its managing partners, okay? But what they want to do, apparently, is measure the candidate's ability to make smart decisions in times of uncertainty. And aren't these the same people that were involved in Enron? And, of course, they're involved also in the mortgage disaster, too.
Well, of course, as you know, Bear Stearns had actually had to close down two of their hedge funds, and they lost billions of dollars on that. And yeah, of course, they left billions of dollars to the hedge funds, and they lost that, too. So these are not necessarily the smartest people in the world today. So, think of course, remember that the president is a figurehead. And you want to have a president who can present himself, at least can frame a sentence, and can speak words without mispronouncing them.
That's right.
It's rather embarrassing of what is in the gentleman who's in the White House today. But the president is simply a figurehead. There's always a man behind him. Now, in the case of George Bush, the man behind him is Dick Cheney. And Dick Cheney, of course, comes from the Trilateral Commission and carries out the programs of David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger and Zygmunt Brzezinski and then the occult forces that they represent. But George Bush is simply the script reader. Doesn't do a good job even reading the script, but he is the script reader. And certainly, whether it's Giuliani or Thompson or Romney or whoever it is, they will simply continue that program. It's been a long time since we had a president who really, of course, was in charge of what was going on. Most of them have simply been controlled, and of course in the last century have usually been controlled by the international financiers who are directing this whole program towards the New World Order and the New World Religion.
How does now David Addington fits into this picture pretty prominently. Now, he is the legal counsel to Dick Cheney, right? And so apparently what he's doing is involved in creating these little signed statements and executive orders, a sneaky way of getting around the Constitution, getting around Congress, and I guess it's like a network of people up to the very top, and I'm not sure who the top is. You know, I don't know if anybody really knows exactly who are the people that are actually telling George Bush and Cheney what to do.
I think, of course, it's the man who tells Cheney what to do.
Yeah,
and he comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. He comes from the Trilateral Commission. And he's been in government almost all of his life in one position or another, but always representing powerful financial interests. In fact, after he became vice president, he continued receiving deferred compensation for his salary with Halliburton, as Halliburton got contract after contract after contract that was a non-bid contract for literally billions of dollars for which they've done very little. So I'd say that they got a pretty good return on their investment. I wonder how many people in the audience have ever heard of a government official receiving deferred compensation once they were to work for the government. Go right ahead.
And the other thing was about the concentration camps. Now, I know, you know, after World War II, they took all the people out of the internment camps and closed them down. Now, what have they done? Have they just opened up those areas, you know,
Well, I think you have to understand that there are three different things, parts of this story. First of all, at the end of the Second World War, they released the American citizens of Japanese extraction who were in those concentration camps, and they simply left them there. Only recently, earlier this year, did they actually appropriate $38 million to rehabilitate those Japanese concentration camps, get them back in working order, so the people could supposedly go to see them, so we would never forget, of course, how horrible it was to have put American citizens into concentration camps. Now, that's one story. The second part of the story is that when we started closing down military bases here in the United States and incidentally opening over 320 military bases in other countries, many of those military bases, a few of them were sold off, but most of them were kept They were actually just changed the wire, the barbed wire, around on the walls of the camp, so that instead of the wire being designed to keep people out of the camp, it was to keep people in. And of course, they kept those camps intact. And many of them, of course, Sydney, are very close to major rail lines. They're turnstiles, so you can take large numbers of people off of railway cars and funnel them into the camp. There are probably dozens of those concentration camps across America. Third, of course, it was in January of 2006, as I remember, that Halliburton subsidiary, that's, of course, Dick Cheney's old company, received $385 million on a four-year contract. They get that much every year to be standing by to be ready to build the concentration camps. Now, we actually have something that came out in 2005, which is an update on the official military regulations on the use of civilian internees on military camps. And we offer that to Radio Liberty. And, of course, that'll be in our new syllabus called the Plan Police State. We've reproduced this government document in its entirety. So we have little question at all that these concentration camps are there in case of a national emergency of some sort, where they can put people into it. In fact, we have an interview with Congressman Henry Gonzalez, formerly who is chairman of the House Banking Committee. And any one of our listeners would like to see that, you can get it as part of the sampler or the amazing clips or the concentration camp special. And there you'll hear and watch Henry Gonzalez, Congressman Gonzalez, saying there really is a plan in case of a national emergency to suspend the Constitution, to round up Americans and put them in concentration camps. And as alien as that is to the thinking of most people, we are dealing with evil people here in the United States.
Yeah. Sure.
So anything else you'd like to ask?
Surely. And the other thing, too, is, I don't trust any of the people in Washington, D.C. Ron Paul, but they all seem to be cowards. And they're cringing, you know, and they're afraid to do anything.
Well, they have FBI records on all of them.
Yeah, well,
anytime they want to get them, they will. Actually keep records. They have a list of about 10,000 potential enemies, political enemies. Many of those are congressmen. They know about all the indiscretions.
Yeah.
They don't have any. They'll send some cute little sexy girl to work in their office to compromise them.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or if they're homosexual, they'll send a man in there to compromise them.
Yeah.
Or they'll have somebody very, very close to them that they can compromise and get. Of course, so they have dossiers, but then on literally millions of Americans, they're collecting that. They call it data mining, and they have, I'm sure, records on everything you buy with your credit card, with your grocery card.
Oh, sure.
Are they on your financial records, your health records, your library records, collecting information, collecting information, collecting information? If you haven't ever heard the four tapes that we have on China, this is exactly what the Chinese communists did before we brought them to power there in China. And the story of Reverend Millen, who was there running an orphanage, in one of the Chinese towns. They knew how many pairs of socks he had. They knew how many shirts he had. And when they came in, they wanted to know what happened to his shirts. I mean, it was the most amazing. If you ever want to hear something that gives you real insight into where we're headed, let me suggest the four tape sets we have on China. It's one of the most amazing tape sets we have. Anything else, Ray?
Hey, one other thing. This is the Verichip Corporation, they call it, is a corporation that is making radio frequency ID chips.
Right.
And apparently, what they envision a market of 45 million Americans.
And
they probably
chips. Much larger than that. They really want to chip everybody in the world.
They do. They
and not only that, there are already federal regulations that not only every animal, but every farm animal would be chipped or identified in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, we don't want any more of those episodes like that, that spinach scare we had. That's why we've got to have the government, federal government, federal law. Every chicken, every goose, every lamb, every cow, every horse, they're all going to have to be you know, Chip, this is not... Not only that, but the farmer has to let the government know if it's ever moved from where it's been put. And, of course, there's no farmer that could possibly do that. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Ray, do you have anything else you want to say?
Oh, there's a congressman who just... there's a bill that is out, and it's...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Fire started about a week after Arnold Schwarzenegger had signed legislation here in California that henceforth in the educational institutions and schools, nobody will use the terms of mother or father. They will always be partner. In other words, what we're doing is using the educational system to indoctrinate our youth in the normality of homosexual and lesbian relationships. And, of course, why would you do that? Why? Because there is a powerful spiritual force behind the homosexual movement, because it is a violation of God's plan. And when or society turns against God, as our society has, God does bring his judgment on a nation. And this was the point that Bart was making. Go ahead, Bart.
Yes, you don't have to be an extreme, wild-eyed, hardcore, ultra-fundamentalist person to know that this is an evil thing that Arnold Schwarzenegger has done to this state. Very evil. One of the most evil things, I think, that has been done to this state in a very long time. I'm quite upset about it. It could be that I am just projecting my own mental thing outwards, thinking that it could be God's judgment. But I would say this, that if God's judgment is a reality, then we are seeing it now. And I would also say that if this is so, then we could probably expect possibly major earthquakes sometime soon. I try to look at this world and country the way God would look at it, and I would certainly be just thoroughly disgusted with everything that's going on. And I'm sad this week. I'm very sad on multiple.
Chris, don't be sad, Bart, because I know you know the Lord, and the thing is that we want to be sad perhaps for the others, but we are on the winning side. Certainly, we may lose everything we have, physically. We may even die before this is over, but if that should happen, then we'd go to be with the Lord. What greater reward could there be? Our job, of course, is to do our best while we're here and realize that in the final analysis, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the hearts of men, the souls of men, and the survival of Christian civilization. But it's God's battle, and we are simply to be the soldiers on the front line, with the breastplate of righteousness and certainly the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is, of course, the Word of God. That is what we have to do. We have to make people realize that what is happening is a reflection of this spiritual battle that's going on. And I believe there are going to be terrible things going on. I don't know whether they're going to be terrorist attacks or epidemics. I believe they're all being created. I believe that the wicked people have the ability to create droughts and storms, and anybody who doubts that has only to read Zygmunt Brzezinski's book called Between Two Ages, written in 1970, where he talks about how in the future they're going to be able to create storms and droughts, and they're doing that today. And, of course, out of that drought comes this terrible, terrible tragedy in Southern California. And nobody will tell you what the government's doing with their HAARP project up in Alaska, where they can actually change the jet streams. We've actually done programs on weather modification. Anybody who doubts that they can modify the weather and change the amount of moisture in the atmosphere, you go up on the Internet and just type in weather modification. There are all sorts of companies that will actually cause rain or snow. And, of course, you drop the snow in Wisconsin or in Wyoming, and then, of course, there's no water in the Middle West. And they're actually interfering with the weather. They're changing it, and they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. They want them to think that this is just accidental, or it's all global warming.
Right. I strongly urge people to take advantage of this window of opportunity to prepare themselves in every way possible, spiritually, physically, and emotionally, and because the time may be coming soon when you may not have access to things you need. So people, get ready. I think this is just the start. Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless.
I agree with you, too. And reflecting on those words of Thomas Jefferson, who said, God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. But can the liberties of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. We'll be back in just a moment. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 4648295. Give us a call. We'd like to know what you're thinking right here at Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan, and we've got Pure Heart. Of course, Pure Heart's one of our old friends. Hi, Pure Heart. How are you doing?
Hello, Doctor.
Hey, good to hear from you. I haven't heard from you in some while.
Oh, I like to listen a lot. I'm too shy to call on the phone. I've got a funny little pain right here. Oh, wrong show. Okay, wrong show. I have a comment.
Okay, go right ahead.
I was listening to a late-night radio show at on a San Francisco station. The host was talking about the polls and how Hillary Clinton was supposed to be so popular. The host criticized Hillary Clinton over and over again, and then he was confused and puzzled because why his phones remained silent. He had to brush the cobwebs off the phones. And it occurred to me immediately, ding, 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 it's all false. There's no, the polls are false. She's not popular. It's being manufactured. And he didn't seem to realize that.
I think you're probably absolutely right.
And that's all I have to say is that, you know, he just didn't make the connection. And so obviously you can kind of see from things like that what's being put in our path for us to accept and what's going to happen.
Now, I don't know if you heard our interview last night with this gentleman who's written a book on the Bilderbergers.
I did not.
He lives over in Spain. The book was released in Europe. It sold over 1 million copies in Spain alone and millions of copies in Europe. It's telling about the Bilderberger, this super secret group that really runs our country. And it's like the CFR and the Trilateral Commission has the same people in it. It's simply one of these elitist groups that has yearly meetings to plan our future. What was so interesting, of course, is when they tried to get the book printed by an American publisher, not one American publisher, and they went to many of them, would touch the book. Well, one did until they found out what it was about, and then they turned it down. None of the major publishing houses would actually carry the book, and so our friend Chris Milligan, Triune Publication, has
actually
been here, and we'll be carrying the book. But it just goes to show you how controlled the media is here in this country. Most people don't understand that 95% of the major media and publishing outlets in the United States are controlled by one of five mega corporations that all tie into this financial banking corporate elite that runs America and makes mockery out of the electoral process. And they, of course, run the candidates, not of our choice, but of their choice. And if there was a man running who certainly was an American who believed in the Constitution and wanted to get out of Iraq and wanted to do what was right and was against torture, he wouldn't be mentioned hardly at all by the control media. That's what we're up against.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks very much for calling, Pure Heart. It's always good to hear from you.
Okay.
Good
bye.
Good night. God bless. And again, I number 1-800-1-888-24-LIBERTY right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Dan calling, and again, our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Doing great, Dr. Stan. I just wanted to affirm what I believe his name was Bert who called in, and his great...
Oh, that was Bart. That was Bart from Cornell.
Okay, Bart, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
My radio doesn't have that great a speaker on it. And I just wanted to affirm his total belief that Schwarzenegger has created the environment which would be the equivalent of a social mindset which is not unlike that of Sodom and Gomorrah. And therefore, the subsequent divine chastisement, which, of course, is in the form of this fire, is relevant. So just wanted to affirm that he is not the only person thinking along these lines. And so let us all pray together that this gets reversed and people who are antagonized by this, as they should be morally, will definitely do everything in their power to resist its implementation.
Well, you know, the difficulty is we live in a nation where there's moral anarchy.
Yes.
In other words, there is no sense of right and wrong. I mean, you go into the current administration, the key man for personnel in the Defense Department under Rumsfeld was a homosexual, and you could not get any sort of a job within the United States military or get promoted to a higher, you know, a position in the military unless you went through this man, and he would simply, people who were not morally corrupt. He would simply make sure they didn't get their promotions, they didn't get a job. Now, why would Donald Rumsfeld, who was appointed by the Christian president of the United States, put a openly well-known homosexual into a key position in the Defense Department? In fact, there are homosexuals in key positions all throughout the current administration. In fact, there are homosexual prostitutes, many of them who spend the whole night. They're in the White House. We don't know who they're visiting, but this is well-known, and there are many rumors floating around. We don't know who they're visiting, but, I mean, we talk about this being a Christian administration, but, you know, you'd never believe what people say. You look and see what they do. And look at the end result, of course, of the so-called Christian administration. What really bothers me is, of course, that the president has said we all worship the same God. We worship the same God as the Muslims and the Hindus, and perhaps he does. But that's not the God that the Christians worship. And so I think we've got a real problem, because I think that by the time this current administration leaves office, that Christianity will be fairly well discredited, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world.
If I may just interject that it was interesting that when Bart called in, I was actually listening to your program, and I was thinking of calling you and saying precisely the exact same thing that he was mentioning. And I thought, holy smokes, I'm hearing myself speak at the other end of this radio program. And then when he mentioned the fact that we believe we are also being set up for earthquakes, well, back in the 90s, I ran across a visionary's comment that they had received a predictive prophecy that there would be an earthquake in San Francisco that would cause it to sink into the sea, into the bay. Nobody can verify that. Like all prophecies and predictions, you don't know until it actually happens whether or not it had been valid. I don't recall the seer's name. I don't recall the exact date in which it was given, but I don't think that is really an uncommon impression on what God has in store for those who dare to fly in his face with their immorality and perversions, etc. But I really think Schwarzenegger was in a trance of spiritual ghostwriting, as it were, when he signed those two bills, 777 and SB 14, into legislation. It's just amazing that he did that. And I'd like to just, and I will close with this one comment. I also believe that President Clinton literally sold his soul. I'm talking about overtly, not just metaphorically. Sold his soul in order to get the presidency when he first became president, because as you will recall, the absolute first thing he did as president was sign four pieces of legislation into law that liberated the getting abortions in the United States. That told me right then and there that this man here has literally sold his soul to purchase that presidency. I don't think you could possibly tie it to anything else. And so I'll leave you with that, and just know that you and all your listeners are in my prayers. So
God bless you. Thank you very much, because I'll tell you what, we sure do need a lot of prayer, because we're on the front lines of this spiritual battle. God bless, and thanks so much for calling, Dan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I do believe that God does bring retribution on nations and peoples. And I would tell you, I would hate to be living in San Francisco today. I don't know what God is going to do to that city, but this is certainly the epitome of evil today. And there are a lot of good people live there, but I'm sure there are a lot of good people lived in Sodom and Gomorrah. And yet, of course, God brought a terrible judgment on those cities, and with the hellfire and brimstone that rained down on that city, and suddenly everyone died. The good and the bad, because the rain falls on the just and on the unjust, and I guess maybe there weren't that many good people in Sodom and Gomorrah, as I remember the story. They wanted to find 10 good people. They couldn't. Why would anybody live in San Francisco which is simply the sewer, really, of morality in our nation today. And I know there's some good Christian ministries up there trying to reach the people, but, well, we have a real problem in America. We have a real problem in California, because we've turned our back on God. We've taken Him out of our schools. We have, we're told that the God that we worship is the same God as the Muslims worship. Why would anybody say something like that? I mean, would somebody be a professing Christian and say that there's no difference between the Muslim God, who is the moon God, and the God who created the heavens and the earth? And I think one of the big problems we face today is that most Christians have never been told the story that I try to tell in my presentation on the forbidden secret, and that is that there's a secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years. It certainly was known to the ancient philosophers. It was known to the Kabbalists. It was certainly known to Solon, who about 600 years before Christ was born, was in Egypt. It was told about these ancient beliefs, what had happened to lost Atlantis, and that someday a nation would arise that would become the new Atlantis and would lead the world into the new world order and the new world religion, and that all of this had to do with the other God. And you could get in touch with this other God certainly through meditation and through the use of your mind, and there was great power there if you allow this other God, of course, to direct the course of your life. And that was, of course, the secret that was passed on then by Pythagoras. And Pythagoras had gone to the Middle East in about 530, I believe it was, and he had come back and formed a mystery school on the eastern coast of Italy, which at that time was under Greek control. And, of course, then these ideas were passed down through Socrates, and Plato had written about lost Atlantis and in his dialogues. And, of course, what most people don't understand is that all of the ancient philosophers, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, always had two messages. One was for the average student, but the other was for the select few, because only a select few would really understand the secret, and that was you could contact this other God and he would give you power and wealth. And that's why, of course, Alexander, with a Macedonian army of 35,000 men, was able to take on the army of Darius, which probably had a million men in it, and Alexander the Great conquered him. How could that have happened? Why, he understood the secret. He had supernatural power. And that was, of course, we actually have the book written by Plutarch, which quotes Alexander writing to Aristotle, condemning Aristotle for telling others about the secret. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling us now. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. The topic tonight seems to be all about God and judgment and all that.
Right, that's fine. Whatever you'd like to talk about.
Okay, just a few things. Regarding George Bush, it seems like the single largest base of support he's got across the country, or possibly the only support base he's got, is the evangelical Christians. Probably one of the most pagan presidents we've ever had, in disguise, of course, has got the support of these people. They want him to conduct this war and prepare the earth for the coming of the Lord. And this is insanity. And, you know, I don't know about whatever judgments might be coming down on the world from God. Maybe the fires are, and maybe the earthquakes are. I don't know who we have really that can actually speak for the mind of God. But I'd like to take a stab at it. the real judgments that I think might have come down already would be on the church itself. There is basically no solid, clear teaching coming from the church as a whole. I believe there are some small churches here and there that have maintained themselves well in the eyes of God. But for the most part, it's a wreck. It's an absolute shipwreck.
I think there really are some great ministers out there. I think Erwin Lutzer, great minister.
Yeah.
And I think that Charles Stanley, great minister. I believe, of course, we have a lot of phonies out there who are really preaching this New Age philosophy. I'm talking about the fellow in Southern California, the Christian at the Crystal Cathedral, and Schuller and similar ministers. But you know, we've got a lot of problems in the church. But I think most ministers really love the Lord. I think that they do not understand the true nature of the spiritual battle we're engaged in. That's the problem. And since they don't understand it, they're not able to, of course, carry on these ideas over to the parishioners. And the reason they don't understand it is because the forces of darkness infiltrated our seminaries, you know, 50 years ago. And the Protestant seminaries, and I'm sure the Catholic seminaries as well, were infiltrated, and the true teaching of the gospel was taken out. I believe that's why the problem is there. Not that the ministers, most of them don't mean well, they just don't know.
Yeah. Well, I believe that loving the Lord and understanding the times go hand in hand, because those who love the Lord will seek His voice, His Spirit, and they'll understand the times in the due course of things. I wanted to address at least one other thing. Most people in the church and even outside the church latch on to the idea of a God of love who only loves and doesn't judge. Judgment is, you know, is harsh and negative and bad, and people love their sin and they don't want a God that judges them for it and all these sorts of things. Well, first of all, they don't know that God's already forgiven their sins, so the only thing they have left is to simply believe in His Son. But for those who are really just onto this idea of a God who must only be a loving, non-judgmental God, they have to ask themselves a question. Would a God of love, what would a God of love do about evil?
Well, I would simply point out, Mark, that if God is only a God of love, that it was the ultimate triumph of evil. And I remember a very wise minister once told me that. He was asking a group of students about the attributes of God, and of course the love and the forgiveness and all of these things, and some person wrote up there, vengeance. He was an Indian. He wasn't even a Christian. He said, vengeance, a God of vengeance. And so the minister was Pastor Roy Kraft here in Santa Cruz, and Roy said, why do you say that? And the Indian said, because if God is only a God of love, it will be the ultimate triumph of evil.
Yeah.
And I believe that is really true. Certainly the first great awakening that America experienced back in 1730 was led by men like Jonathan Edwards, and I wish every American could read his speech, A Sinner in the Hands of an Angry God. And it was the fear of God, of course, that touched those people's hearts. And if God is only a God of love, then why not just go ahead and do whatever we want to? Yes, I believe God is a God of love, and I believe He's forgiven our sins. But there is judgment for what we do. And God, I'm sure, weeps when, of course, we turn against what we know is right and do the wrong thing.
Well, my point is simply this, that a God of love must do something about evil and judge sin.
All right, I agree with you totally, and yeah. I believe that this is one of the great, of course, misconceptions of today. I believe this is Satan's lie, that God is only a God of love, and you take all concepts of judgment and punishment out of it, because if God is only a God of love, then He would never punish anyone. He would never send anyone to hell, and if there is no hell, why, of course, then we don't need a Savior.
Yep. Okay.
Anything else?
Enough for now.
All right,
thanks,
fine. All right, well, our telephone is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Anyway, that's 464-8295. We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, basically, I'm not a theologian. I can only share with you what I've learned from people who are a lot smarter than I am. But I have no question at all that we are involved in truly a spiritual battle. In fact, I'll never forget the church I first went to in Santa Cruz when we had returned from Africa. And there the minister told me that he was frankly under demonic attack. And when I described a demonic attack that I had, he taught me, actually, how to stand against the demons who were trying, of course, to frighten me. And, of course, to claim the blood of Jesus Christ. and that would give me power over the demons. He himself, of course, fell into marital infidelity and had to leave the church, as did several of the other people there, and at least one of the other ministers in the church. And then, of course, later on we had another minister in the church, and I'm just finishing reading the book he wrote about the satanic attack he was under here in Santa Cruz. As the demons came, of course, to attack him, and of course, he was heading the same church here in the little town in which I live. Unfortunately, there truly are demonic spirits, and I think there are probably more here in Santa Cruz than most places in the world. There really is another dimension. There really is a supernatural dimension, and our job is to understand that and of course, to try to bring people into a personal relationship with our Lord. We talk about a lot of issues to, in some ways, to entertain and to inform. But in the final analysis, our major purpose of what we do is to bring you either into a closer relation or a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ. All right, fine. Well, let's go. We've got Todd. Hi, Todd. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Just two quick things, sir. Do you think anything about, like, the wildfires on California might have been potentially, or have you heard anything?
Yeah, there's a very real possibility that they are arsonists. In fact, I think they already have somebody under arrest, and they have leads on some other people. Yes, there's a very serious question about arson.
Right. And also, I just wanted to, because the program tonight, a lot of the callers were talking about spiritual matters, and I just wanted to concur. This is definitely we're in a supernatural reality, and I know the Lord's been in my life, and I just wanted to say that, I think as long as we're here, we're never going to be perfect, and I think anybody that, doesn't realize that God is merciful, I think that's the key.
That is our only hope, because we're all sinners saved by grace, but that doesn't mean that we have a license to continue sinning.
Well, that's true, and I'm one that's really trying hard to turn back and live a righteous life. It's pretty hard.
It is, but for all of us, believe me.
I can use some prayers too, Doctor, and I'll pray for everybody and pray for you too.
Well, I appreciate that, Todd. Anything else you want to say?
No, God bless you, sir.
Thanks so very much. Well, let's go to Donna, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Donna. How you doing?
Fine. I wanted to ask you about the Scottish Rite Temple in Washington, D.C.
Right, you're talking about the Masonic Temple, right?
Well, it says Scottish Rite on it.
All right, fine. Well, the Scottish Rite, of course, is one of the two divisions of the Masonic faith. One is Scottish Rite, and the other is the Royal Arch, as I remember. So that is the Scottish Rite Temple, right? It's a Masonic temple.
Does it have anything to do with Scotland?
No. It was simply that a gentleman who established these rites called it the Scottish Rite, but I don't know why, except that the... maybe, of course, basically what happened is after Jacques de Molay was burned at the stake back in the 1300s, many of the Templars went to Scotland, and there they continued living. They built their Rosslyn Chapel and elsewhere, and then, of course, the modern-day Masonry is a continuation of the Templar faith, so it is probably tied into the Templars and the fact that they lived in Scotland for many years. Modern-day Masonry is simply a continuation of the religion of the Templars and the Rosicrucians and the Kabbalists and of all the secret societies. There have been the secret societies that carry the mysteries down through the ages, and that is what modern-day Masonry is. Anything else?
Oh, thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you for calling. And let's, of course, go to... well, how about Sandra? Is that Sandra?
Yes.
Hey, how are you doing? She's calling from Blythe, California.
Right.
Hang on there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Sandra calling from Blythe. This will be the last call for the evening. Sandra, go ahead. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I did have a comment. I'm reading A Dereliction of Duty by Buzz Patterson.
Yes, isn't that a great book?
Yes, and these Clintons are Edomites. If you would understand the lineage of Esau, and you could see it in their... faces and in their actions, and I began to look at the bushes. If they had not mixed with the sons of Esau, you realize that Esau will throw off the yoke of Jacob in the end times.
Well, I think, of course, that the Edomites are really are Arab, or certainly they are Arab-like in their features, and certainly that doesn't look very much like Bill, or certainly not like Hillary.
Well,
but anyway, I appreciate so much your calling. And
they are. Esau intermarried with the Hittites and the Canaanites, too. We have quite a few here in Blythe.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much. Appreciate
thank
your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye. That was Sandra calling from Blythe in California. Well, anyway, this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do need your help to continue doing what we're doing and maintaining the network of outlets that we have across America on shortwave, satellite, internet, and of course on radio stations. And we are fortunate that we do have an opportunity to reach many, many people with the truth that they will never hear elsewhere. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, don't be bashful. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then we had talked earlier in the program about talk I've given on the forbidden secret. That secret that has been passed down through the mystery religions for 5,000 years. We have the talk on DVD. There's a syllabus that goes with that. We have the four tape or four CD set, the secret behind the secret. We have the award-winning DVD, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone. So we hope that many of you out there would certainly want to get these. We also carry something I think is so important, and that is the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. That's Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And if you be interested in getting any of the information, if you'd like to get a catalog, if you'd like to get one of our newsletters, our number 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we hope many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com. And you can actually go to the section on videos, and you'll find we posted a number of videos. Our video technician, our video master, has actually posted many of the videos we've actually made. And they're up there on the Internet, and you can watch them. And then, of course, we have our archive programs. And you can listen to those for either delayed or on MP3, or you can listen live 9 hours a day on our Telstar 5 feed. And then, of course, you can read our newsletters, and it's really fascinating when you go to the Internet and you Google in Radio Liberty, which is our ministry, and then a specific subject like General Anthony Zinni, 4-star Marine General, and they'll tell you the article, the letters, where you can read what General Zinni said about how we never should have gone into Iraq. 4-star Marine General, certainly he was in charge of he was the senior delegate from our government in that part of the world prior to the 9/11 attack. And Zinni had access to all of the intelligence, and as he said, you know, there was no reason at all why we didn't simply finish up the battle and get Al-Qaeda and get Osama bin Laden. But we never should have gone into Iraq. Well, anyway, if you can get this, use Google on your Internet, and then, of course, take advantage of the newsletters we have. They have a tremendous amount of information. I agonize over them every single month, but I think most of them are well worthwhile reading. They will give you an excellent history of what's going on and an understanding of where America's headed. So please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty. We need the protection of your prayers. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And for this hour, our guest is Patrick Wood of the August Review. Hi, Patrick. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Fine, thank you. Thank you for having me on your show tonight.
Well, of course, Patrick is certainly been in this business for a long time. Certainly in the 1970s, he was a friend of ours, Professor Anthony Sutton, one of the really great researchers of what's going on, and a man who pointed out that the United States began funding our wicked enemies over in the Kremlin right back about 1918, and we continued funding the communists, from that time on, all the way through the Vietnam War, and we're still funding them today. But Professor Sutton did die probably 4 or 5 years ago, but Patrick had worked with him and written a number of books with him called The Trilateralists Over Washington. They were very, very well known. What was it, about the late 70s that you wrote those books?
Exactly, late 70s and early 80s, yeah.
So Patrick has been at this for a long time, just as I have, and this is why I always love to have him on. I had the pleasure of meeting he and his wife here recently, and for the first time, although we talked for many times before. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about the lost treaty, what is it called?
Law of the Sea.
The Law of the Sea Treaty. And, of course, I think that you have to understand, you go back in 1974, Richard Gardner, a member of the CFR, Rhodes Scholar, wrote an article in April of 1974 in Foreign Affairs Magazine, which is the theoretical journal of the organization that controls America and makes mockery of the idea that we actually pick our president, because the president always comes from, or vice president always comes from somebody who's a member of the CFR. And, of course, in 1974, Richard Gardner talked about how we were going to have to do an end run about the Constitution. These people hate the Constitution, they're elitist. And he commented that we would do this simply by using GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, and, of course, the World Trade Organization, and the Law of the Sea Treaty. And, of course, now here we are, 33 years later, they're bringing this back again. They want it enacted, and certainly the Bush administration is going right along with that. Patrick, why don't you explain to our listeners what the Law of the Sea Treaty is, the lost treaty, and why we must oppose it.
Well, exactly, and we're going to talk about the concept of sovereignty as we go along here, and that was essentially, sovereignty was the issue that Richard Gardner had in mind in that 1974 article. It wasn't per se a hatred of the Constitution. It was the fact that they hate liberty and they hate the concept of national sovereignty. And, of course, the Constitution stands in the way of reducing our national sovereignty to a zero. So, in their minds, the only way to get rid of national sovereignty in the United States is to get rid of our Constitution, which, of course, endows us with the concept of sovereignty.
But, of course, Richard Gardner was actually ambassador to Spain under the Clinton administration. Clinton was also a Rhodes Scholar and member of the CFR, but Richard Gardner would have had to have sworn an oath to uphold our Constitution,
yes,
and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and yet he himself was an enemy of America.
Yes.
He is a traitor to our country, as is all of the globalists, because they want to destroy our Constitution. They want to destroy our sovereignty. They want to destroy our freedom. These people are an elite group who have a different view of the world. And until the American people understand that we have traitors at the highest levels of our government, indeed, they are true terrorists.
That's right. We will fall from within. If we fall at all, it'll be because of forces from within, not because we were conquered by a military power from outside. But the law of the sea treaty, which is one of just one of many things that are on the table right now that you know, that sovereignty loving people need to be aware of. The law of the sea treaty started actually a long, many years ago, back in the 70s. But the essence of the law of the sea treaty, which is a United Nations treaty, it gives the United Nations control over all of the oceans of the world. That is, 70% of the Earth's surface is covered by international oceans. And the United Nations, via the an instrument called the ISA, that's the International Seabed Authority, would be in a position to control 70% of the surface of the planet. Everything over the oceans, the airspace over the oceans, the water itself, the surface, and also the seabed, where, who knows, untold, you know, wealth in terms of minerals and oil and natural gas and all those sorts of things as well. And they intend very pointedly to dictate, you know, who mines what on the ocean floor, who travels where in submarines and surface ships. If and there's several things wrong with this treaty. President Reagan, by the way, back in 1982, refused to sign and accede to the Law of the Sea Treaty. He was against it on several grounds, but the bottom line was, and Reagan was not a nationalist by a long shot. He's very globalistic in a lot of ways. Even he saw through it and says, "No way, am I going to sign this Law of the Sea Treaty?" So it's been around for a long time, and now President Bush has picked up the gauntlet for whatever reason. All of a sudden, is hot to pass or to have the Senate pass the United States' accession to this treaty.
No, because but George Bush is a globalist. His father was a globalist. His grandfather was a globalist. His loyalty is not to America, but to this internationalist dream. That's what most people have such a hard time understanding. That's why he supports the North American Union. Union, North America. He said he wants to do away with our sovereignty, and the Law of the Sea Treaty is the key to that.
Well, the Law of the Sea, you know, we've talked about some other issues recently.
Hold
Dr.
on, hold on, Tom. We'll be right back here with... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Patrick Wood is talking about the fact that the Law of the Sea Treaty is basically about sovereignty. Doing away with the sovereignty of America, doing away with our Constitution, and bringing us under international control, and simply pointing out that Ronald Reagan refused to sign this legislation, but George W. Bush is doing everything he can to get this legislation through the United States Senate, and of course he will sign it and agree with it, because George Bush is a globalist. His loyalty is not to America, it is this internationalist dream, and the enemy certainly is not sitting in a cave in Pakistan with a laptop computer on his lap, you know, typing out things by candlelight. The enemies sit in Washington, D.C., and some of them sit in the White House itself, because they have a different agenda, a different worldview, and they certainly do not believe in the Constitution of the United States. So pick up the story there, Patrick.
Well, exactly. For whatever reason now, George Bush, President Bush, is willing to sign the treaty. Early in his administration, he was not willing to push the treaty. But ever since the Russian government sent a mini-sub to the North Pole to plant a flag on the bottom of the ocean, claiming that the North Pole belonged to them now, all of a sudden we saw this push within the United States to join the Law of the Sea Treaty. And if we do this, we will not only empower the United Nations in a way that they've never been empowered before, but it'll also be a huge drain on U.S. taxpayers. It'll be a huge loss of our sovereignty on the oceans. And it's interesting that some of the modern Navy commanders, that is people in charge of the Navy, are actually standing with Bush right now on having this treaty passed. But what's really interesting is that some of the admirals of days gone by, retired admirals, are just their jaws are dropping to the ground. One, you know, what are you doing? You know, they're sending out the greatest possible alarm that these people have lost their minds if they think that the United States is going to be win anything on the ocean, you know, as far as the sovereignty on the ocean is concerned, if it's turned over to a corrupt, bureaucratic, unelected, unaccountable international seabed authority. It's absolutely outrageous. Yet, this is what, you know, this is the bum's rush right now that Bush is giving us. And, of course, it's not just Bush himself. This has to be passed by the Senate. Bush is pushing it. But the Senate has to vote on it, and they have to vote, I believe they have to have a two-thirds vote. So there's a lot of sway that we can have on senators at this point to put pressure on them to not vote for the Law of the Sea Treaty to be passed.
All right, now what should people then, if they're going to try to carry on a discourse with either the senator or probably somebody who works in their office, what would the arguments be against the Law of the Sea Treaty?
Well, the arguments against the Law of the Sea Treaty, there's so many things, Dr. Stan, to talk about. It's just, you know, I have to say, I have not read every page of this treaty. I have talked to people who have, however, and they just, there are lists of things that are just, you know, huge questions. I'll give you one example. In fact, Bill Clinton called this treaty the greatest environmental treaty of all time. That gives you a warning. One of the things that the ISA will be in charge of will be pollution in the ocean. That is, they will be able to say what goes into the ocean and, you know, who's going to be responsible to clean it up if it gets messed up and so on. And one of the obscure provisions in this treaty is that the ISA will also be concerned with land-based pollution that happens to float over the ocean and fall to the ocean. So there's an enforcement mechanism where the ISA will be able to put teeth to their environmental enforcement on the land masses of the countries, you know, that are producing the pollution. Now, China should be an obvious target for that kind of thing. China is horribly polluted. But the fact of the matter is the United Nations is stacked with people who hate our guts and routinely vote against us, you know, case or issue after issue after issue. We very rarely come up favorably on any vote in the United Nations, and the only reason that we get along with the Security Council is that we have veto power and can veto something there. But otherwise, the ISA is going and would intend to control pollution in the ocean and pollution on the land.
Now, you keep speaking of the ISA. What is the ISA?
This is the International Seabed Authority.
Okay, the International Seabed Authority. Go ahead.
The ISA is the governing body, if you will, of this treaty. And they have a relatively small staff right now, but that staff would be greatly increased if the United States accedes to the treaty. And so another issue that is just amazing is that the ISA would have the ability for the first time ever to impose mandatory taxation on the members of, you know, of the members of the people of within the treaty and people who use the oceans for whatever means.
And I think that's really so important because, of course, the whole idea of the United Nations was to become a world government. And they
would
have
them
everything you need for a government. They have a legislative, a judicial, an executive branch. They have a world court. They have a world police force. They have a world army. They have everything you need for a world government except the ability to tax. And that is the frightening thing of this lost treaty, because for the first time in history, now they'll have the ability to tax. And remember, when any people have the ability to tax, there's no limit on the amount of tax they can impose. I mean, remember, the income tax in America was never to be more than 3% and only on the very wealthiest people. That's all it was. And they promised this. In fact, they didn't even put the limitation on them, 3%, because they said if we put a limitation of 3%, why, everybody would immediately raise the tax to 3%, and it will never go that high. They promised the American people that. Well, I mean, can we believe the United Nations is any more honest than our leaders of our own government, who in 1913 and 1914 promised us that the American people would never be taxed by the income tax? So, and now, of course, we're giving the United Nations a carte blanche to really tax whatever they want to, don't we?
Well, exactly right. And if the United Nations is able to gain autonomy, not living on donations from countries, but if they are able to raise their own budget, they will not be even accountable to the nations that are the member nations anymore. They will be able to do basically whatever they have in mind to do, whether it's good for the United States or not. It's absolutely outrageous to think that we will be supporting this organization initially. Right now it's floundering, by the way, because most of the member nations aren't paying the dues. If we accede to it, we will assume a 25% of the budget responsibility. Because we're a larger country, for instance, than Uganda or whatever, we will take on a 25% commitment to fund this agency, which will then turn around and potentially tax us half to death and the rest of the world as well, and raise enough money to become completely independent of the countries that now service it. It certainly is the direct predecessor to global government.
And that's
right in front of us right now.
And of course, then they'll be able to fund a much larger army that they could use against the United States, if, of course, we didn't go along with their dictates.
I mean, exactly.
We are creating a Frankenstein monster, but that has always been the plan.
Right.
The plan for 100 years has been to have a world government, and of course, we fought the First World War to create a world government. That was to be the League of Nations, and when that failed, why, then we had to have a Second World War. And that's why I believe we have to have a third world war, because they want world government, and they don't care how many people die in the process. They have a goal, they have an objective, and of course they believe that we need also a different world religion. And it all goes together, the new world order, the new world religion, and the coming world leader. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Exactly. Well, the rule of law plays very heavily in this now as well, because, as we've discussed before, the international rule of law is altogether different than the concept of our local domestic rule of law, that is our legal system in America. And international law is opposite as it is in many cases to U.S. law, is now being accepted into U.S. courts, into even the Supreme Court, where the laws surrounding these treaties and these things that we get ourselves into are now becoming the law of our land. We didn't pass these laws, our Congress didn't pass these laws, our senators didn't pass these laws, but these laws are now being enforced and adjudicated, that is forced upon us to be adjudicated in an international court. This is absolutely, again, it's absolutely outrageous that our courts would be mandated by some international body, again, most of whom hate us. Another thing that this law of the sea treaty brings in, if we accede to it, is that there's a provision that says that they will be able to take us up to court, to the international court, even if other treaties are violated, even treaties that we're not even a part of, if other global treaties are violated that have to do with the oceans and the marine environment and so on, that we could be brought up for not holding up to the terms of treaties that we haven't even acceded to, Dr. Stan. It's the most outrageous thing. It's like a carte blanche for us to be brought up for any law in the world that they want to bring us up on, even if we haven't agreed to be a party to it.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, I guess it's Patrick Wood. Go right ahead, Patrick. And I certainly agree with you. What's going on really doesn't make any sense unless you understand that there is a much larger agenda.
Exactly.
And that is why, of course, George Bush plays his part. Initially, he opposes this because, oh, he's a good American. He wants to protect our Constitution. But now, at this time in history, and I believe that there is a cosmic clock. I believe there is a cosmic plan. I think the play is certainly being enacted at the present time. And now, suddenly, George Bush, like the chameleon, has suddenly turned, and now he wants his legislation passed. Why? Because it will destroy the sovereignty of our nation and bring us under the control of the New World Order and the New World Elite, which is what it's all about. Go right ahead.
Well, I really do think that this is part of, there's a coordination between, you know, bringing this Law of the Sea Treaty in at this particular time and what's going on with the North American community that's being fostered by the heads of state of Canada, United States, and Mexico. And a lot has been said about the North American Union or the North American Community, as it's called in academic circles, which proposes to merge our three countries together into a regional trading bloc and ultimately a regional government as well. But one has to remember that the regionalization of the world, you have Europe, you have the European Union, you have North America, the North American Union, you have Africa with the African Union, you have Asia with the Asian Union, and so on. These regional governments and regional trading blocks are predecessors to a complete, full-blown global government. And the end of the process will be to merge these regions into one single government. And the way the United Nations is being pushed right now, it would appear that this is the chosen instrument that these people will use to try and impose a global government over all these various regions, is wrapping the regions together now into a common body of law. And I might just say as a side note on that, whenever you hear the president or any other top elected official talk about how important the rule of law is in America, and to them, let me tell you, hold on to your wallet. Because they're in process of picking it, not financially so much. But when they talk about rule of law, they are not talking about United States law. They are talking about international law. And that's altogether different. Many countries, Dr. Stan, for instance in China, you're not guaranteed a trial by jury of your peers at all. If you're lucky, if you get two or three magistrates to hear your case, and you're just as liable to get shot as you are released when they're done with you.
But, of course, China is a nation of laws.
Sure, they have laws. They're a nation of laws. They're ruled by laws, and they, certainly they do maintain some semblance of order. But the point is, China is a communist country, one of the most repressive regimes in the world, that the history of the world has ever seen. Along, you know, Russia's in the same boat. That is the Soviet Union with the communist revolution and so on. The most repressive governments the world has ever seen. Tens of millions of people have lost their lives at the hands of these brutal dictators. And whatever law they have, they can keep it as far as I'm concerned. They can just keep their law. I don't want any part of it. I don't want them telling us how to, how to set up our legal system here and how to...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Patrick was simply saying that when you hear our leaders talk about the fact that we're a nation of laws, you have to understand what laws they're talking about. Since our leaders really don't believe in the Constitution, they violate it on a regular basis, and of course when they talk about laws, they're really talking about international law, and which will supersede our Constitution, because these people hate freedom, they hate our Constitution, they have a different worldview. Because in my estimation, they worship a different God. Patrick was simply talking about, you know, in China, where of course they have the rule of law, but of course it's one of the most oppressive regimes in the world has ever seen. But what most people do not understand is that the American State Department brought the Chinese Communists to power by undercutting the nationalist regime, which would have been installed after the Second World War, had it not been for the intervention of America's great tax-exempt foundations, our State Department, which of course put an embargo on the nationalist Chinese so they couldn't buy weapons anywhere in the world, and we made sure, of course, that the communists had plenty of weapons so they could impose their tyranny. And people say, why would they have done that? And it's really very simple. We didn't want the competition because communism is a very inefficient process. And of course, what happened in China was a massive social experiment. And in August of 1973, David Rockefeller wrote an article that was published in the New York Times, and of course we have copies of that article. And David Rockefeller, after visiting China, they'd already killed by this time probably 100 million people. And he commented there may have been a little brutality there, but certainly and I quote here, the social experiment in China under Chairman Mao is one of the most important and successful social experiments in the history. The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao is the most significant and important in history. That's what it's all about. It was just a social experiment to the likes of David Rockefeller and the men he represents, and the same thing happened in Russia. A great social experiment. We did not want them to be successful economically because America was, of course, to lead the world into this new world order and new world religion. So that's what it's really all about, and I think Patrick is absolutely right. Oh, these people who stress for a nation of laws, these people don't believe in the laws. They torture people to death, and they see nothing wrong with that as long as they've given the orders. Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, that pretty much sums it up. The buzz phrase, rule of law, is the particular phrase that we need to be very suspicious of when coming from anybody from the State Department or the administration, or even certain senators and congressmen who are, you know, completely sold out to globalization. It has a double meaning. It means one thing to Americans to live under a legal system that gives us the protection and that we have, that we enjoy in this country. It is not the same legal system internationally. They would seek to replace our legal system with something that is far, far less beneficial to the people of our country than what we have today. That's part of sovereignty, though, Dr. Stan. That's where I was going with that. The issue of sovereignty has everything to do with the issue of law. And sovereignty means that if we had complete sovereignty in our country, it would mean that we are able to self-determine our course in the world, to self-determine our future, to self-determine how we want to run our own country. Lack of sovereignty, taking away sovereignty, means other people will have the right to some extent to tell you how to run your country, to tell you what laws to pass, what laws to enforce, and will even assist in enforcing other laws outside the country on you that you had nothing to do with creating in the first place. This is absolutely the fundamental concept of socialism and communism that we have dealt with for decades. We know it very well. And these political philosophies live to lord it over other people, to oppress them for the benefit of a few elite. And that's what they're trying to do to us today.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's so important that people understand that what is really going on, what motivates these people is they have, they worship a different God. They don't believe in the God of the Bible. But there has been, for thousands of years, an effort to bring about world democracies and world government. Anybody who doubts that has only to read a book written by one of the most influential philosophers of the last century. His name was Manly P. Hall. The book is The Secret Destiny of America. And he will tell you that for over 3,000 years, there have been secret societies working to bring about world democracy. And certainly FDR, when he was in the White House, actually sent people out to copy all of Manly P. Hall's records there in Southern California. And we have people, of course, who like FDR, who had a different world agenda. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Patrick Wood. Patrick, go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, one of the things, one other thing that we need to bring into this, is, I think at this point as well, is how important it is in America, and of course there's holes in our system right now for sure, but how important it is in America to have leaders who are accountable to the people. This is one of the foundation stones of our country for over 200 years. That the people who serve in government are accountable to the people for their actions and for what they do or don't do. Acceding to the Law of the Sea Treaty will create a precedent, and we will be the ones creating this precedent that the accountable representative government that we have now, which is made possible by our Constitution, will be replaced with supranational bureaucratic arrangements that are not transparent, and they're completely unaccountable to the people. Now, what that means, we need to connect some of the dots here. What this means is that, as it is in Europe today, laws are passed down into the countries of the European Union by bureaucrats who have never, may not even speak your language for that matter, but they're bureaucrats that have never been elected, maybe appointed, but self-appointed by and large, who are creating laws and regulations and then telling the countries they must implement these laws and regulations as they see fit. The organizations that are running the European Union today are completely corrupt. When I say corrupt, they're corrupt with money, they're corrupt with bribery, they're corrupt with sexual scandals.
You're talking now about the European Union.
I'm talking about the European Union.
Right.
And I have to say that this is exactly the same kind of corruption we see at the United Nations.
But, of course, the major force behind the European Union is the United States. The United States has funded this thing, this whole idea, these elitists, you know, the CFR and trilateralists and Bilderbergers. What the European Union? What are the first stepping stones along the way?
Exactly.
Uniting the various divisions of the world into this one world order. This is the age-old plan. But, of course, this was not primarily a European idea. This was an American idea and funded by America. And they're going to do the same thing right here. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Patrick Wood. And certainly if you'd like to talk to Patrick, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Patrick, before we go on, I want you to get out your web page, telephone number, whatever you'd like to get out, so that people can get the excellent information that is available from the August review.
Well, the internet is the best way to get our information, Dr. Stan, and that's www.augustreview.com, August, like the month, review.com, and people will find everything that they whatever want to hear, plus some more probably about the subject of globalization. We haven't mentioned yet that I am intently focused in the past on this organization called the Trilateral Commission, which was founded in 1973. Very elite organization that was that came into existence apparently and very obviously to create a new international economic order that we have today. And we studied that. That's what Professor Sutton and I studied back in the 70s, and we followed this organization ever since. So a lot of my writing is obviously is critical of these organizations, centers around the Trilateral Commission involvement in these various things. As far as Law of the Sea Treaty is concerned, I would want to point out that, and I didn't get this really until just this year, Dr. Stan, but back in 1976 when Jimmy Carter was elected, he was a member of the Trilateral Commission, so was his Vice President Walter Mondale, one of the people that they swept into government from the Trilateral Commission was Elliot Richardson. And Elliot Richardson was appointed as a special ambassador to the United Nations. It didn't mean much to me at the time because I didn't know what Law of the Sea was. It just started back then. But Elliot Richardson was appointed to be the ambassador to the Law of the Sea. This was in 1976. This obviously they saw, even back then, they saw the importance of the Law of the Sea Treaty. And so they were pushing it and crafting it and, you know, shifting its direction and so on. And they felt it was important enough to appoint somebody directly from the Trilateral Commission to be the ambassador to the Law of the Sea.
And I think anybody can go to the trilateral.org, I believe that's... Is that the website, trilateral.org?
That's their website.
Their website.
Right.
And look at
that. Actually, go to the Trilateral Commission's website and see a lot, quite a bit of stuff there.
But look at their logo. If you look very closely at the current logo, it is three sixes joined together by an upside-down broken cross. Oh, shucks, I wonder why they would have come up with a logo like that. 666, upside-down broken cross. Well, let's go to Mike here, calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. You have a question for our guest?
Just a couple of things, if I could. What Patrick was saying a while ago about the under the Law of the Sea, they can control whatever goes into the sea, which has directly to do with waste, as states and counties, cities dump their waste into the sea. You know, they normally treat their waste, but then they all have pipelines and, well, even rivers. It all goes out to the sea, and so these people then who have the Law of the Sea can control all of our emissions or our waste, which ultimately controls everything we do.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Have a comment on that, Patrick.
That's exactly right. That's one of the main torpedoes that they're shooting at us. I say torpedo because it goes under the water and it's not easily detectable. This is one of the sub-clauses of this treaty that says that they will be able to control land-based pollution as easily and efficiently as they control the marine-based pollution. That includes air pollution as well as water pollution that emanates within a landmass. And, it's certain, almost certain, that a blind eye will be given to China and to Russia and some other countries around it, all the third world countries. But the eyes of the world will certainly be on the United States to tell us what to do with our own business.
And, of course, basically, remember, of course, the man who controls George Bush is Dick Cheney. And where did Dick Cheney come from? Why, of course, he came from the Trilateral Commission. When he went to work for government, he had to give up his seat, but his wife took the seat for him. So Lynn Cheney is now a member of, I think, 80 members of the 80 members of the Trilateral Commission. And the logo is three sixes joined together by an upside-down broken cross. Anything else, Mike?
Well, it seems like all they have to do is put a lot of sensors, a mile off our coast all the way around, and penalize us accordingly.
Amen to that, because we're laying ourselves open for disaster.
Now, back to what you were just saying before the break about the United Nations, I can't remember exactly, and the United States has given its support or invitation to the United Nations. What were you saying exactly?
Run that by me again.
Stan was saying something. It doesn't exactly matter, but I wanted to point out that the relationship between the United Nations and the Rockefellers. The United Nations is actually almost, you could say, a project of the Rockefellers.
Amen to that.
Who are they really? And my point being, the family name is actually Rockefeller.
All right, fine. Well, let's get... I think we really need to focus on the spiritual force behind it, but thanks very much, and let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I had a question. Does this Law of the Sea Treaty, does it have any direct effect on our shipping lanes? What kind of... you're talking about pollution, right? Of the sea and on the land, right?
Well, but the use of the sea, too, and the use of the sea, and everything about the sea would be under international control.
I was thinking about that, and
And I thought that, well, it probably would have an effect on the shipping, our shipping.
Well, yeah, it does. It will immediately, I might add. And it does it like this. The treaty specifies that the oceans will only be used for peaceful purposes. Now, of course, that will allow the passage of ships, you know, for free trade, the big super tankers and all that kind of stuff. But if the United States sends a submarine to collect intelligence out in international waters, that could be viewed and probably would be viewed as a non-peaceful use of the sea.
What will we do with our aircraft carriers? You know, they're certainly not for peaceful purposes.
That's true.
Exactly so. So yeah. Our Navy, our U.S. Navy, would be curtailed by these unelected bureaucrats, dime store bureaucrats.
Yeah, right.
To tell our Navy where it can and can't go and what it can and can't do. And one example was given, I think that was a very good example, was let's say that that it was determined a ship was headed for New York Harbor out in international waters, and it was known that the ship was loaded full of terrorists with atomic weapons or whatever on board to blow up New York City.
Right.
And it was known that that was the case. Now, the United Nations might send their own Navy to intercede to stop such a ship from progressing any further because it's an act of non-peaceful, a non-peaceful type of ship being sent across the ocean. But the United States would be prevented from interceding in international waters.
Oh. Okay.
To take that ship off the face of the map.
Okay, now I get the picture.
You know what I'm saying?
What?
So now, when the ship came into our domestic waters, like it enters the harbor, for instance, we could jump on them and pound them into, But
right.
You see, the point is,
they've already
detonated their. Their nuclear weapon or whatever.
And we got to feel proper, Ray. This is a disaster treaty, and that's why George
Bush.
We can't
defend ourselves.
Right, that's why George Bush is backing it. Why the Trilateral Commission and Dick Cheney are backing it, and George Bush, of course, takes his instructions from them. Anything else you want to say?
I just wanted to mention one other thing, and that was that the U.S.'s high-tech corporations or investment bankers are exporting surveillance equipment technology to Beijing. And, of course, the Chinese and many cities are using this advanced face recognition and behavior detection technologies. And HP and IBM and Cisco and Dell are all involved.
But you go back. I don't know if you've read my one of my newsletters, the one where we quote from Solzhenitsyn. But he actually gave a speech in 75 pointing out that how in 1973 and 74 the United States corporations were sending sophisticated technology to Russia that was used by the KGB to control their population. Mm. We have always helped both the Chinese and the Russian communists to maintain their ruthless dictatorship because, of course, our leaders have exactly the same objective. They just can't let the American people realize that we have been helping the ruthless dictators of Russia and China oppress their people.
Oh, yes.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, that's all. Well, apparently profit is the motive.
It's really much more than profit, Ray.
Well, maybe more.
This is the mistake.
Yeah.
You really need to read our little pamphlets. It's a very inexpensive little a pamphlet. It's called The Communist Capitalist Alliance. It includes Professor Sutton's classic speech before the Republican Central Committee in 1972. It includes Solzhenitsyn's speech to the AFL-CIO in 1975, and points out, of course, that we are financing the Soviets today, even though we're having to borrow money to pay our debts every single month. We're still funneling money into the Soviet Union to help them maintain their ruthless dictatorship as it grows increasingly ruthless. None of this makes sense unless there's another agenda. Anything else, Ray?
Yeah, of course, Hillary Clinton, the Chinese are butt cozy with Hillary. I've heard that.
No, because let me tell you, there's a very, very serious spiritual problems with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Patrick Wood of the August Foundation. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Well, that's, he had that right about the technology transfer continuing today. We've seen a constant drain to China over the last 25 years of technology. Some of it was sold, some of it was stolen,
and some of it was simply given for all intents and purposes. In fact, we have invested hundreds of billions of American dollars to build up this Chinese miracle. We are guaranteeing a $5 billion loan to Westinghouse so that they can build nuclear reactors in China. Why are we guaranteeing a $5 billion loan so Westinghouse can build nuclear reactors in China, but we can't build them here in the United States? And nobody ever asked that question.
No, they don't. And certainly the press in America is highly controlled by a very small group of organizations and the people that run those organizations. So most of these stories simply just don't get out to the mainstream press or through the mainstream press.
But it's well documented.
I
heard the most wonderful story today. In fact, it was mentioned last night on my radio program, an interview I did. And we were talking about what was happening financially, and I hadn't heard this story before, but apparently both the Israeli government and the Egyptian government each receive about $3 billion a year from the United States in the stipend that we pay them regularly. But this year they were asking that that be paid in euros, because, of course, the dollar is dropping, so they want to get something that is not falling and actually going up in value. So both Israel and Egypt have actually asked the United States to send their stipend, which they're entitled to, of course, in euros. And we checked this out. The story is true. We live in a world gone mad.
that's almost humorous if it didn't make you cry.
I know. Let's go to Ron, who's calling from Wisconsin. Hi, Ron. How you doing?
Good. Hello, man. Hey, catching the end of the program here and trying to learn as much as I can.
You can listen to this program tomorrow. It'll be on the Internet if you have access to that.
Sure, sure.
It'll be posted there in a day or so.
Okay, Dr. Stan, I heard you say a couple weeks ago, I think I heard you say that we're talking Trilateral Commission and Bilderbergers and these different groups that nine men rule the world. Yeah, you remember mentioning that? I was just curious.
Some people have said this, and we don't know who those nine men are. We can conjecture, but we may be wrong. But I think there's a very small group behind what's going on, and behind them, of course, is Lucifer himself.
Right. I agree with that. I was just curious about these nine men. I mean, what group is that? Or
we don't know.
We don't know.
It's all conjecture.
Okay.
I mean, we some people talk about the Illuminati. I believe that there are secret groups that nobody has access to today.
And what's the significance of the number nine?
I really can't tell you.
Can't tell you.
Right.
Okay, so, but how many members of the Trilateral Commission? How many people are in that?
Now, we've got the expert on the Trilateral Commission with us tonight, okay. Patrick Wood. Patrick,
there's
how many
about,
people
there's
are
about 300, there's less than 350 people
worldwide
members today.
And, of course, this is how many Americans are there?
Oh, gosh, you know, I think from North America it's about a third, and there's a few in Mexico and a few in Canada. It's probably around 100.
All right, fine. And then, of course, Europe, and then, of course, Asia.
Right.
What about Illuminati? Any idea how many members would be of that and Council on Foreign Relations?
Well, of course, we know the number of Council on Foreign Relations, about 4,000. Remember, most of the people in these organizations, at least the CFR, do not really understand that they are a front for a secret organization. And that's what created them back in 1921. An awful lot of them are opportunists, but most of them are globalists, because that's how you get ahead. You
sure.
embrace these ideas, you go along with the flow, and you get great wealth and prosperity.
Which of our recent presidents were not members of the CFR?
Well, there haven't. Presidents, George W. Bush is not a member, but Dick Cheney is. There has not been one presidency since 1973 that has not had a member, at least president or vice president in this organization.
You're talking about the Trilateral Commission, right?
That's right.
Now, for instance, Ronald Reagan was not a member of either the Trilateral Commission or the CFR, but he surrounded himself with people from the Trilateral Commission,
right,
and the CFR and his vice president. George Herbert Walker Bush was a member of the Bilderbergers, of the CFR. He was a member of the Bilderbergers Trilateral Commission, CFR. He was a former director of the CIA. He was a member of the Skull and Bones.
Right.
He was a member of all sorts of secret societies.
Do we know how many members there are in the Illuminati?
We really don't.
We don't. And then how many nations are they from?
They're from Europe, all over the world. But remember, these are the illuminated ones. They tie into the upper echelons of masonry.
Okay.
They're simply a parallel organization. Okay. They're very, very secretive, and of course we have a few people who claim that they've come out. We do not know that for a fact.
Okay.
Okay.
Do we know about Mike Huckabee? Is he a member of the CFR?
I don't think so. Do you know anything about him?
I don't. I'm not sure that he is. I don't think that he is.
All right, fine. I hope that'll help you, Ron.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Well, Patrick, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, that's good, Dr. Stan. It's been a great discussion tonight, as usual. I would like to point out something that Robert Pastor, Dr. Robert Pastor, who's becoming the father of the North American community right now, back in 2006, last year, just a little less than a year ago, he said, quote, "A crisis is an event which can force democratic governments to make difficult decisions, like those that will be required to create a North American community. It's not that I want another 9/11 crisis, but having a crisis would force decisions that otherwise might not get made." This is a frightening statement, Dr. Stan, that these people are waiting for crises to happen in order to jump on them to move some of these hard decisions, if you will, that would not otherwise get made by a free people.
It really is so interesting. Of course, it was the day after the 9/11 attack when there was a meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C., and Senator Gary Hart got up and said, you know, this incident may give the president the opportunity to carry out a program that his father spoke of, and I think only on one occasion, and that is creating a new world order. Now,
right.
We actually have the film presentation of that, and it's available through Radio Liberty in a video we carry called The Day That Changed America Forever. What's really so interesting is that if you look at the transcript as it's recorded by the Council on Foreign Relations of that meeting, they deleted Gary Hart's statement. Can you believe that? Gee, what's a bit of topographical error.
Topographical error.
Anyway, Chris, this is the sort of thing that goes on, ladies and gentlemen, and people must understand. We've got the Daniel calling from Southern California. Daniel, have a quick question. We're almost out of time.
Well, a quick comment. I ran into a fellow at a grocery store, older, 70 years old, and he had a shirt on that said, with the Masonic symbol with the compass and the G, and it said, "There is no conspiracy," but then he's wearing a hat. He said that he's a member of the Masons, and you know, and so I thought, well, I was trying to figure this guy out, and I guess I would have to agree with him, but below the certain degree level, 32nd or whatever, there is no conspiracy, but above it, there is. I think it's, we you guys know what that is.
Absolutely right. We can go to the writings of Manly P. Hall. In his lectures on ancient philosophy, you said that Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity. An outer fraternity, men having a good time, and inner fraternity of those who study the Arcanum and Ancanorum. Hey, we're out of time. God bless, Daniel. Thanks so very much. And Patrick, thank you so very much for being with us this evening. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoy our conversation with Patrick Wood. He's certainly one of those people who's dependable and certainly is coming from the right point of view. And we recommend the material at the August Review website to you. Great source of information, great patriot, and has been at this game for a long time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are involved in a spiritual battle. We hope that many of you will want to help. And if you are not already a member of the Radio Liberty family, why, please, of course, consider joining. If you can't afford to, you can go to our website. You can look at our videos. We have all sorts of videos at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs archived there or live. You can read our newsletters. Or if you can't do anything else, simply pray for our provision and protection, because, believe me, we cherish your prayers, and I believe this is why we cannot come under the terrible spiritual attack that has really destroyed so many other ministries that are doing what we're doing. And that is trying to bring out the truth about the truly demonic forces, about the fact that there is a spiritual dimension to everything going on today. Well, let me simply point out that if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to get our new 4-tape set on the Military Commissions Act, and that would go right along with the new syllabus we have, the Planned Police State. And, of course, we'll be giving that talk this weekend at the all-day seminar at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And of course, we're looking forward to those of you who are coming to meeting you there. And we're going to have a great time. But you're also going to have an opportunity to pick up a lot of the documentation that you're going to need to reach other people so that they will understand the truth about what is really going on today. There are people who hate America, and many of them are working at the highest levels of our government and trying to bring us into the under the control of these international bodies, the United Nations, and, of course, all the ancillary organizations. You need to get my talk on the forbidden secret. You need to get my 4-tape set or 4-CD set, and most of our sets are available in either one, entitled The Secret Behind the Secret. And then the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. That's the 4-hour, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, because many of the people in the music industry sold their souls to the devil. What people don't understand is many people in industry, in foundations, in the military, and in government have done exactly the same thing. They've come in contact. They've learned how to contact the beings from the other dimension. You'll certainly want to get an understanding of the fact that there really are these beings. They call them the spiritual hierarchy, the masters of wisdom, the elder brothers. And, of course, they are beings that are truly demonic in nature. What do you think UFOs are really all about? Why, of course, they're manifestations of the dimension. Many of the crop circles, many of the cattle mutilations, all manifestations of the other dimension. Understand that what is going on today. If you look at it from a logical point of view, why in heaven's name could the greatest nation in the world, the United States, fight a 10-year war with a little tiny country the size of the state of Mississippi in Vietnam, and we would lose that war? We never lost the war. We never had to win. Our boys were not allowed to win. Our military was not allowed to win any more than our soldiers are allowed to win either Afghanistan, where we've been fighting for 6 years, or in Iraq, where we've been fighting for over 4 years. And if you haven't read that speech by General Ricardo Sanchez, that will be my tape. That'll be my newsletter, not the coming one, October, but November's newsletter. You want to read what General Sanchez said, because he said the best thing we could hope for in Iraq would be to avoid defeat. The best thing we could hope for would be to avoid defeat. Understand what we're really up against, ladies and gentlemen. General Sanchez risked everything to tell the American people that on the 12th of October. Have you read about it? Are we hearing about it over and over again? Is it being asked to come on to 60 Minutes in other areas so that, well, we're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're tuned to the Global Star.